everyone. Welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. Really glad you clicked on today's episode because it is a good one. And we go on a journey with Ryan Vargas because there's a lot of highs, there's a lot of lows, there's some emotion, and there's some fun all included in this conversation. And gosh, I loved it so much. And listening back while I was editing got me emotional at some of the parts where Ryan was talking about some dark times and some times that upset him, such as that emotional interview at Pocono. And then I laughed along with times that Ryan was laughing just at the surrealness of what he gets to do and the fact that he has you race fans in his corner. So we are going on a journey, as I say this week. It is a lot of fun and we cover a lot of ground. One of the things we don't do, though, we don't really get into a whole lot about Ryan's background because I feel like he's done that a lot already. He's done some fantastic interviews in the past, either with The Athletic or I know he's done some other podcasts. So you all can do your own research and really dig into that if you are curious about Ryan. So for me today, what I wanted to do in this conversation is more just throw some random things at him and dig more into how hands-on he is when it comes to his career. What I mean by that is Ryan does everything. He is busting his tail. You will hear me tell him that because I think it needs to be said. I think he needs to know people recognize the work he is putting in from social media to cold calls, emails, networking, everything you can do to put yourself in a race car. And that is what Ryan does. We talk all about that. Selling himself, speaking well, the scariness of coming to North Carolina as a teenager, why at 18 years old he already thought he was washed up and done. We're going to talk about what it means to have a driver's notebook mentally and physically. He explains what it means to race with emotion. We go into all things social media because if you are a fan of Ryan or maybe you just see him on the fringe, you probably see him on social media. He embraces every platform there is. Again, we cover it all. It's a great conversation. I don't want to keep rambling because I want to get you right to it. We cover a lot of ground. I really enjoyed this. So here it is. I hope you do as well. It's Ryan Vargas on the Racing Writers Podcast. Again, a lot of what you do is well known, so I just want to throw some random stuff at you to learn a little bit more about you. Not necessarily racing related, because like I said, we all see what you're doing every week. You're busting your tail with that JD Motorsports team. Yeah. So first off, you're 21 now. So yes. Are you having any fun with that? Have you done anything fun?
I mean, I had a little get together here at the house, enjoyed some time with some close friends. Obviously, you don't want to have too many beverages before a hot Vegas race, but no, it was a lot of fun.
A lot of seat time for you this year, Ryan. This is the most races you've run in a single season. That has to be just valuable in itself. Like I said, I know a lot of what you do with JD Motorsports, you're busting your tail on and off the racetrack with that team. But when it comes to seat time, how nice has that been this year to just run as many races as you have?
It's been massive because you look at all the races this year, it's been a great opportunity for me to just get laps, you know, more laps at tracks that I haven't been to, more laps than I ever thought I'd get in an Xfinity car, to be frank. It's such a unique opportunity that I never thought I'd have. And to go to these races, whether we run good or run, you know, near the back, I'm still getting more laps than I ever thought I'd get. And I'm taking each lap in, adding them to the notebook, the mental notebook, the real notebook, whatever I have, just so that I can use that for the future. Because obviously, I want to be here for as long as I can. And so I'm going to basically take advantage of every opportunity I can to learn and grow.
Take me inside a racer's notebook, not the mental one, but the actual one. You keep a physical one, you just said. What does that look like?
So it's more like on my computer, well, really my iPad, but really it goes more in depth as to what lines I see, what I felt versus what other guys talked about or felt or what I saw them doing. I watch a lot of footage. That's my biggest thing. Obviously, without practice or qualifying, I'm jumping into a lot of these races for the first time with no experience. So that's another tough one. Like, we're going to the Roval this year. Yeah, I've raced at the Roval, but last year was a tropical storm just about. So I'm really counting this as my first Roval race. So I'm using all the footage I can. Same thing with Talladega. I've only been to Talladega twice now. I mean, going in there for my third time. Yeah, I've been there three times, but both of the other times, had no practice of qualifying. I'm still very fresh to the whole super speedway racing. So I'm still trying to learn as much as I can there. So it's all about growing and trying to learn all that I can each time so that I'm ready Because I want to be at least 80% where I need to be when I get in the car. If I'm 80% where I need to be, I can build that 20%. Even if I'm 75%, I'm still 5% behind where I need to be when I get in a race car. And I think that's the most important part.
When I was doing some research and just looking at past interviews you've done with different people, I came across something interesting. I think it was a few years ago. I don't think it was recent, where you told Jeff Gluck that you made the comment that you race with a lot of emotion. And I wanted to dig into that a little bit more. What exactly, first off, does that mean to race with a lot of emotion?
Well, I race every race like it's my last, because I know what it's like to not have an opportunity in racing. I spent a majority of my time from late 2018 to early 2019 not having a single clue what I would be doing. I'd raced Kindercane and Pro Series East, now the ARCA East, and it was a great opportunity. But once that opportunity fizzled out, I don't have sponsor. I didn't at the time. I didn't have sponsor dollars. You know, I don't have a last name, or I don't have, you know, personal family money to kind of go out there and race these race cars. My mom's a kindergarten teacher. My dad's a construction worker. The fact we've made it this far is insane. So I know what it's like to not have an opportunity. And so I told myself, I'm going to take advantage of the opportunity. I keep saying take advantage of the opportunity, but it's really just knowing the situation, knowing how fortunate I am to be in a race car. All the stuff that I do at this desk, you're sitting on a whiteboard of tasks and sponsors and schedules and all these things, and I'm trying to all put at once. It's very misorganized and gives me a headache sometimes. But at the end of the day, this is what puts me in a race car. This is my job, doing the phone calls, the emails, the note, writing notes, all this other stuff. That's my job. Driving the race car is my payment. That is my payment, is driving a race car. So if I'm doing all this and I get to drive a race car, doesn't matter. I'm happy.
Yeah, we are talking through Zoom. Listeners are, of course, going to listen to the audio version of this, but try to describe, as you were kind of doing right there, where you are and what it looks like. You are sitting at your desk. You said it's your home office / bedroom. Try to paint the picture for people of how you make that work.
Well, so my bed is off to my left here. I'm facing away from it. And really, I have my whiteboard on my wall here, and it's literally full to the brim of upcoming races, sponsors, potential sponsors, companies I want to go after or I'm currently going after. And I have it there because I know that if I wake up in the morning, say if I decide to sleep in one day, it's 8 o'clock, 8:30, and I look at the whiteboard and I'm like, that's what's going to tell me, hey, bucko, get up. You have something to do. You know, there's no sitting down today. I'll take Sundays and just relax and, you know, just enjoy myself. But 6 days out of the week, I'm doing something, doing some sort of work. You know, a lot of people are like, how do you balance things? It's like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know if I am balancing yet. I haven't reached that point yet, but it's what's gotten me here. It's what's gotten me to the point where I'm able to drive these race cars on a pretty consistent basis. And it's what allowed me to continue my career further than, as I said earlier, further than I ever thought I'd go, let alone ever than I should have gone.
It sounds like you and I are similar, to where you have to see it and it gives you that motivation to get it done. So like you said, you have a whiteboard. I'm one of those. I have sticky notes everywhere. I write everything down. So that is your motivation. You see it in the morning and it makes you do it and get to work.
Yeah. I mean, that's really the case. I mean, I look at it in the morning and I say, all right, I have X company to talk to today. I have a meeting at 1:00. I have a phone call at 3:00. I have this interview. I have this. It just gets me out of bed. And it's that motivation that tells me, all right, you got to do these things. And guess what? If you do all those things, you get to drive a race car. And that's the way I think of it.
There you go. Like you said, it's the reward. So you're talking about doing a lot of phone calls because, again, you handle a lot of your own stuff when it comes to trying to make your career work. Does that mean you're cold calling people? I hate that. I hate having to call people. Are you the same way, or do you not get nervous, or does it not bother you?
I do cold calls a lot. Actually, 2 of our 3 major sponsors this year were cold calls. I mean, don't get me wrong, cold calls still just aren't very fun. You're basically having to really quickly try and sell yourself to X business person and, you know, try and make a good impression in as quick a time as possible. And you're never going to be able to do that. You're basically the cold call and say, hey, here I am, blah, blah, blah. Let's set up a call when you're already on that call. But that's how it goes. It's always nerve wracking, but it's also, like I said, I mean, Swan Security, that wasn't a cold call, but it was a cold email. That was a cold message. I just reached out. I found the person I needed to talk to. I reached out. Monarch Roofing, that was a genuine cold call. And that turned into 2 races this year. And we've done a lot with them. We've been able to connect them with different partners and grow that. That was only supposed to be 1 race. Now it's 2 and has the potential to be even bigger. So we're building all these things and I do all this stuff on my own, which is difficult. But again, it puts me in a race car. And that's the way I view it.
Right. We've been talking a lot about what you do in terms of being hands-on for your own career. So is there anything else? Cold calls, again, sponsor obligations, trying to land partners. I know you're big on social media. I want to talk about that a little bit, but you do a lot with different social media platforms. Is there anything else that you do, Ryan, when it comes to handling things for your career?
Well, I mean, I try to go to the race shop twice a week, at least. I go to the race shop in JD Motorsports. I'm in Huntersville. They're in Gaffney. So I go there Mondays and Wednesdays. I'll go there. I was there yesterday. I was there from, 8:30 to closing. So 8:30 to 5, just doing miscellaneous work, trying to help where I can. We took the wrap off the Vegas car to get it ready for Texas. Yeah, Texas is the next race for that car. So I'm getting that car ready. We put the motor in the Talladega car. I saw them do that. I helped them get some miscellaneous parts on. They know I stress out about putting things on cars because I helped put on the power steering pump and they're like, oh, did you get it tight? And I'm like, I think so. But I like doing it because I like working with these guys. I want to be there and learn as much as I can. Do I see myself eventually transitioning into working in the race shop full time if driving a car doesn't work out? I don't think so. But I do want to make sure that I'm well-versed in it. I want to make sure that I know what's going into this car. I want to know what parts are going onto it, what change does how the car reacts on the pull-down rig and all this stuff. Because I know that if I'm able to put my best foot forward in the shop and my team sees that, they're going to want to put their best foot forward for me. And that's the way I've done racing my whole life, working on my own Bandolero, street stock, late models, even in the K&N series. That's the way I've wanted to do it. That's the way my dad always taught me to do it. My late model crew chief, he kind of instilled that work ethic in me. And I try to do that as much as I can today. And I don't know everything about cars. I don't. I still know so little. I mean, just yesterday I was learning something about these cars and I just was like, hey, this is just me wanting to know. I don't understand what this part does. Tell me what it does. And they told me because I don't know and I want to learn.
It's funny because you say that about the cars, but you also talk about doing sponsor and marketing things. And I'm just curious, have you had any formal background of any of this or are you just learning as you go and just doing what you think is right?
I have no formal background in any of this. I just have a lot of people that believe in me. That's the best way to put it. I have a lot of people that believe in what I'm trying to do. I have a lot of people that want to teach me what I need to do. Because if I do something in the race shop, if I come across something that I'm working on and I don't know what to do, I'm not going to sit there and try to figure it out. I'm going to ask for help because I don't know. Again, you don't know what you don't know. You're not going to sit there and try and figure something out when you just simply don't understand what it is. Same thing with marketing. I had to take 1,000 no's before I got that first yes. I mean, I think the biggest thing that taught me the most was landing TikTok last year. That was intimidating on its own. Yes, I had some very, very smart people, help execute contracts and stuff like that. But when it came to the meetings and talking and trying to sell myself to arguably one of the biggest companies in the world right now, that was me. I mean, I would be on Zoom and there would be ex-SDO marketing guy, marketing lady, this person, that person. And then on the other side of the Zoom call is me. At 19 years old, trying to sell myself like, hey guys, so this is why you should help fund my racing. And it worked. And that was something that I took a lot of mental notes and a lot of experience from that. And I use that as to how I go about selling my sponsors for all these other partners. You see a lot of my sponsor deals, with Swan, Monarch Roofing. Monarch Roofing was an obvious one with the video I put out where I danced in front of the car. A lot of it takes inspiration from how I went about those TikTok deals. I try not to do things conventional because nothing about my career is conventional.
That's a good point. We've been talking for about 15 minutes now, and obviously I've heard you speak before in interviews. Like I said, I go back and listen, or I've heard you at the racetrack. To me, you come off very well-spoken, a natural speaker, I would say. And obviously, if you're pitching people, you want to be well-spoken. Has that just always been a natural thing for you, Ryan, where you felt like you could speak well, present yourself well, or is that something you've worked on over the years?
I mean, obviously, you naturally know how to not shut up. For me, that's the way I view it. I can't shut up. I can't. I like talking about cars. I overthink things. Overthinking is my biggest vice. So if I'm going to sit here and worry about, okay, how am I going to have full allotment of tires for the next race? Okay, I got to talk about it. I got to talk to this company. So that's the way I do it. I view it as my way of not shutting up. If I'm going to not shut up, I might not shut up to a company that might have interest in me. And I have a lot of passion. Like you mentioned, I race with my heart on my sleeve. Anytime there's someone that's on my race car, they are directly helping me drive that race car. They are directly keeping me in that race car. They're pushing my career forward. Oh, it's just one race to the next. What's the difference? That's one more race than I ever should have got. And that's the way I view it. And does not shutting up sometimes hurt me? Yeah. But at the same time, it's also helped me land sponsors. It's also helped me interact with fans because I like talking to fans. That's another thing. I grew up a fan. I was sitting in the grandstands at Fontana when Tony Stewart burnt it down and slid in the grass and did a huge burnout, and it was awesome. I was a fan first. I'm a fan first. I'm always going to be a fan first. And I'm just lucky to do what I do.
Right. You moved here as a teenager, I believe.
Yes.
You're a California boy. You came to North Carolina as a teenager. Was that scary at all? Did you have anybody come with you? What did that look like when you relocated?
So I was 17 when I moved across the country. I moved with my father. He moved out and stayed out here for a few months. And then I kind of took the reins and lived on my own at an apartment. You know, at 17, 18 years old, I used race winnings from late model races to pay for groceries and rent. Did miscellaneous jobs. I worked at Lee Falk Racing at the shop, late model team out here in North Carolina. I got connected with all these teams. And at the same time of moving across the country, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I never liked being where I was in California. I knew I was far away from where I wanted to be. I always wanted to be in North Carolina, whether I was racing NASCAR or just whatever. I always wanted to move here. In fact, I wanted to move here since I was 4, but that's just because Gravedigger was made here, the monster truck. I was a huge Gravedigger fan growing up. But I always wanted to be here. And, you know, living on my own was a tough time because, like I said, when I went through that period where I didn't have a ride, I went through that alone. My dad was across the country. My family was across the country. I didn't have nearly the amount of relationships I have now. I didn't have nearly the amount of support I have now. And so I kind of sat there 18 years old on my couch in my apartment in Concord saying, I'm done. Like my chance is over. 18 years old, I'm washed up. I don't know what to do. And that was a gut punch. And I had a lot of things on the personal side that were going wrong as well. So it was the first time in my life where personally things were going wrong and professionally things were going wrong. And that is easily the darkest point I've ever been in, especially doing that alone. Like you said, is it scary? Absolutely. But now I look at where I'm at today. I'm racing Xfinity. You know, I've got so many incredible partners who help keep me in a race car. You look at some of the things we've done in such a short amount of time in my short stint in this Xfinity series so far. It's been insane to really think about and look at. And I'm very glad to do it with the people I'm around. You know, JD Motorsports, people look at us and it's like, oh, you know, smaller family-owned team. But it's like, look at the things we've done. We brought TikTok to the sport. We brought so many new partners. Alvin Kamara, Swan Security, Mate Next, Monarch Roofing. I danced in front of a race car. And that's all been part of me getting better as a human, not just a driver, but as a human. That's me having fun doing what I'm doing. And I've always told myself, I will never put myself back in the point that I was when I was sitting alone on my couch thinking I was done. That's what I work towards every day.
Well, and I was going to bring that up because I think it was that same Jeff Gluck article that I mentioned earlier where you use the exact term of being washed up. And that just stood out to me because, like you said, you're so young and you were just getting started, it seemed like, to already feel like you were washed up. If you could just expand on more of why you felt like that. Was it just because the opportunities weren't there or you felt like you couldn't find an opportunity?
It was a mix of both. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do because I had my Canadian opportunity. And when that team went from 3 cars to 2, it was a business decision. And that I agree with what the decisions they make. There's no ill will at all. But at the same time, it left me on the outs. You know what I mean? It's still at the end of the day, I was still like, okay, what do I do here? Like, how do I recover from this? I've moved across the country. We've sold all of our racing equipment. I don't have any sponsorship. I was told about me not being on the team late in November. So that's time when all these rides are taken out. That's in terms of how much money they're going to put in. So how do I do this? And it took a long time for me to kind of just say, all right, I got to do it. I did have a week where I just was just existing. I was just existing. I didn't know what I was going to be. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I was going to be going home to California. I didn't know if I was going to be just trying to find a job out here and just kind of fall into the shadows. I didn't know at all because, like I said, that was the first time I've had that. And very fortunate to find sponsorships where I was able to run late model races. Let me like take a step back. So I'm sitting on that couch and I'm saying, okay, I had my week where I was just existing. Okay, what do I do? All right. Now I need to drive a race car. I need to drive a race car. I don't care what kind of race car it is. It could be a street stock all the way to a cup car. I need to drive something. Okay. I found the funding. Let's do late model racing. Cool. I got funding to run 30 late model races. Awesome. Now I'm driving race cars. Okay. Now how do I get back into NASCAR? And I shouldn't have said anything from street stock to cup because that's unrealistic. But I was looking more like anywhere from street stock to K&N or ARCA. That was like what I was looking at. And I found that and I was able to get back in. So now I'm like, okay, now what's next? How do I get back into a stock car, a NASCAR stock car? Because I won a handful of races that year, which was awesome. It proved to me, it gave me the confidence that, hey, I could still do this. Now I have to sit there and say, okay, how do I get back in a stock car? We're able to take it to JD Motorsports. You know, Johnny Davis, he had no reason to put me in his race car. I was, again, a washed up 18-year-old kid who past experience doesn't just, you know, at the time, wouldn't justify much. That race at Iowa Speedway 2019 was a make or break race. That was me making my last ditch effort. If I go out there and ran last or junk the car, I'm done. That's it. You know, I'm done in racing. That's it. You know, I'm going to hang it up. I'm going to go and try to do marketing or broadcasting or whatever. Well, let me go out there and run inside the top 20, top 15 all race long. I'm trying to figure out how I did that because I need to have more races like that. It was a race where just everything clicked. We ran inside the top 15, finished 17th. And I remember Johnny Davis coming over the radio and saying, you've done good. You have a long future in this. And that was like the bookmark right there. That was, all right, that chapter of my life of that huge struggle, the struggle's still going to be there, but that part of my life, now it's how do I grow what I have now? And you've seen what it's grown into.
Yeah. And I was going to say, to see now how far you've come and the fact that you can put the work in and make all this happen. You were talking earlier about, look at what we've done this year. Look at what you did last year with bringing sponsors in the sport. That has to feel good. You have to take a moment, right, where you can sit and be proud of yourself, so to speak, that, again, you put the work in, look at what we've accomplished, because you don't want to move too fast and forget to enjoy the accomplishments along the way.
That's the thing. And everyone's like, oh, when are you going to make your cup debut? And it's like, hold on. No, I'm not ready for that. I have a really good base where I'm at. I have a really good opportunity where I'm at. I'm not, again, we're only looking at, I think in total, I only have like 35 Xfinity starts, which is crazy. I never thought I'd get that high a number, but I only have 35 Xfinity starts. I mean, that doesn't justify me jumping a cup yet. That doesn't justify me trying to do anything crazy yet. I still have so much to learn. I mean, Vegas this past week, that was only my second time ever touching Vegas, which is crazy. Like all these guys in the field had been there before, except for me. And it's just like, it's such a unique opportunity, an opportunity I never thought I'd have. And that's another thing too, is I look at some of the things we've done and it's like, good. What I'm doing is I look at myself as a stock. I look at myself as a driver, as a stock. I'm trying to raise that stock value. I'm trying to raise that value, you know, as a stock, as a driver, so that in the future, you look at 1, 2, 3 years down the road, when I do want to start making these leaps, okay, I have stock. I could take that stock and try and go and do these things, you know, because at the end of the day, you have to build yourself up. I'm not going to sit here and tell you how hard I work, but I am going to sit here and say, look at what we've done and look what I'm trying to do. Because I don't need to tell people how hard I work. If I'm going to be that guy, I would hang up the call right now. I mean, that's how I am.
So how does a young driver then get recognized? You're talking about stock there, and that segues into a question I wanted to ask, which is, you're a young guy, you're not in top equipment, you don't, like you said, you don't have the money behind you, you don't have family or a big sponsor. So when you're a young guy that wants to get a shot, though, down the road to hopefully be with the top team, how do you get yourself noticed?
You have to continue gaining respect. You have to shake hands. You have to meet people. You want to be the guy that when people talk about, hey, who's a guy that will do their job? You want to be the guy who will do the job. I know what my job is as an athlete. I know what my job is as a business person. I know what my job is as a driver. And there was a portion this year where I knew what my job was, but I didn't know how to execute that job very well. And so now I'm learning. And when it comes to business, I look at the business side of things. I'm looking at my board. I have check marks next to every race that was sponsored. And right now, I'm looking at the board. I think I've only ran 3 races unsponsored. We started the year with all of them unsponsored. Going into Daytona, every single race was unsponsored. And so, okay, our job is going well. In a perfect world, all those races would have been sponsored. And then I look at the driving side. Okay, how many races have we done well? Okay, cool. How many races have we had an issue that was inflicted by me? Okay, cool. Now I know where I can be better. So I look at these races and I take everything in. And it's like, okay, where are the faults? Where are the things that I could do better? And that's what I can do, because you can only control the variables that you have influence on.
You mentioned it there. You don't even have, I think, 50 starts yet, but this is, as we said at the top, this is the most races you've run in a season. Looking at on track, what would you say some of the highlights are, Ryan? What's been the things that have stood out?
I would say the big thing is getting that top 10 last year at Texas. I think that was a massive day, not just for myself, but for our team, JD Motorsports as a whole. Yeah, we have our occasional run where we go inside the top 10 at the speedways like Daytona and Talladega. You know, you can never ride a JD car out there because we have a strong super speedway program. But to go to an intermediate, mile and a half, place that is tough. Texas is a tough track, especially with the reconfiguration. The next car to us was a colleague car that day. The next car that I had to pass was a colleague car. So that tells me already, okay, we're going out there. We're running with the guys that are 3, 4, or 5 times our budget. We're beating guys that are 2, 3, 4 times our budget. We're over excelling in areas that we never thought we'd over excel in. And I think that's what the goal is. You know, you want to go out and overachieve, but you also don't want to cross that line and get yourself in trouble. You don't want to go out there and bin it. You know what I mean? It's that just makes the whole situation really bad. But that's one that sticks out to me. Because I remember the emotion of crossing the line. It felt that crossing the line, finishing 8th place, felt bigger than any race that I've won ever. Because I knew how big that was for our operation. And that was with TikTok on the car as well. That just showed how much sponsorship can help a team. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I can go out and run top 20 and stuff like that. But for us to go out there and run top 10, that's a direct help from what TikTok brought to the table and was able to put into our race cars. And so now we go from talking about running top 20 to talking about running top 15, top 10. I mean, you can look at the Texas race and say, oh yeah, well, there was a couple crashes. There absolutely were a couple crashes. You do have to have some things go your way. But we were also running 12, 13 at the time. So we had speed regardless, but you also got to count on some freebies.
You led laps earlier this year at Talladega, and you tweeted a really awesome picture of someone on the team had written on something. So first off, okay, that answers one question, which is if you still have it. My second question was, what is that? It looks like a piece of wood, or maybe it's not a piece of wood. Do you know what that is?
I think it's from the pit wall.
Okay.
I'm looking at it. It's layers of paint, and it's yellow, and then there's like a little bit of pink. So I think it is. Yeah, it's a pit wall, because I know Talladega had their walls pink at one point.
Yes, they did.
So, yeah. So this is a part of the wall from Talladega. That was a big moment for us. That was a big moment for me. That's when I kind of like it gets kind of forgotten about because of the results. We were a very strong car that day. Yeah, it was under a pit cycle. But to go out there and lead laps in Xfinity, that's big. And I look at that and it's like, I have that. That's another thing in my pocket. That's another thing into the stock. You know what I mean? That's another thing into the stock. it's just crazy to think about all these things that have happened. And I said it last week, I never should have made it this far. And so the fact that I have laps led, I have an Xfinity top 10, multiple top 20s. We're now in the double digits of top 20s. Like, holy smokes, let's go. Like, that's awesome. Like, I mean, that is stuff that makes me as a driver feel good. That is what makes me look at what we're doing and say, I am doing what I need to do. Am I doing everything I need to do? No, there's always areas that I need to be better at, but we're doing great on the marketing side so far. Yeah, like I said, we had a few races, three, I think, this year where they were unsponsored. One of those races we got a top 20 at, by the way, Mid-Ohio, completely unsponsored, finished top 20. So come on, y'all. But we've run these races unsponsored. And I know the struggle of running unsponsored. I know what it's like to not have tire money. So I also know what it's like to go out there and have a car with the better stuff, the better equipment, the TikTok package. You know what I mean? I know what that's like. The Swan security package, the maintenance package, the Monarch roofing package. I know this package. I know what each opportunity is. It's how you maximize each day. That's what my crew chief case tells me. Let's maximize the day. We went to Richmond. We went to Bristol. And unfortunately, we broke. But he said, we just got to maximize all day long. All day long, we got to maximize. Did the same thing in Atlanta. We had to take our short track car to Atlanta because we wrecked our primary car from Pocono. That was going to be our Atlanta car. So we had to take our short track car. Finished 14th in our short track car at Atlanta. Like, what? So it goes along with what I was saying. It's just taking advantage of the opportunity and then maximizing all of it.
And then now, like I said, you have that piece to keep as a permanent reminder where it's written on there to mark mm-hmm. the occasion that you led some laps. What is it like, Ryan, to be a race car driver? And I ask that in the sense of, look, it's probably a pretty damn cool job, right? We can all say that.
Oh, absolutely.
But emotionally and mentally, physically, what is it like to be a race car driver?
You are... Emotionally, you put every ounce of what you do into it. You look at this room, this bedroom. Boom, 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 boom. Look at.
Yeah, pointing out posters and what you got, some trophies back there, I think. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah, my 2 Wendell Scott Trailblazer Awards and all this stuff. It's what you live for. I don't think there's a day where I'm not stressed. That's another thing. You're stressed a lot. You're stressed. You're thinking about things. But like I said, it's everything your life revolves around. You know, you put so much into it. And there's days where it just rips your heart out. I mean, I think the prime example is Pocono. Pocono, that was a really tough day. I lost one of my best friends in racing, Brian Lear. That was the last car he built. That was a race we didn't have sponsorship, which sucked. And we destroyed a race car. And I luckily didn't feel like I was at the bottom where I was a few years ago, which was good. But that was a very big blow as a driver. There's times where you sit there and it's like, man, you put everything, your heart, your soul, your entire week, your entire month, your entire year into something, and it just falls apart. And that's what that was. That was a day falling apart. And that interview on TV, that was me falling apart. That was me finally just saying, all right, I just got to let it out. And there are so many days in racing that are going to push you to your point, your breaking point. But it's how you manage those breaking point type days that make the days where you are leading laps, getting top 10s, top 20s, top 15s. That's what makes those other days far better than they ever would have been.
Why do you think the fans have gotten behind you? And in that same sense, it seems like sometimes you find it incredible that you have such a following that you do have. Why do you think fans have latched onto you?
I don't know. I'm literally just a regular guy that just drives race cars sometimes and I talk about it. That's the thing. I said it earlier. I was a fan first. And so I get to see Xfinity cars up close, like in person. Like I get to look at them and touch them sometimes and like sit in them. And like, that's so wild. At the end of the day, you look at what we do and it's just so crazy. Like that's my dream. And I'm currently in the middle of chasing it. And I hope to, knock on wood, chase it for many years to come. So I think why people latch onto what my story is because they see my excitement. They see how much fun I have doing what I do. Yeah, I'm chasing the dream and I'm nowhere near the top yet. I still have a long ways to go. But if I was chasing a dream and not bringing people along for that and telling my story and having fun with it, then what is the point of even chasing it? Like, if you're going to chase a dream and not have fun doing so, or be able to poke jokes at yourself or interact with people that like watching you, then what's the point? I've never understood going to the track, hopping in the car. All right, cool. Good race. I'll see you. Like, I don't get it. And I'm not, and you know, there's some drivers that, you know, they get in the zone. It's like, okay, cool. Do it. I just don't, that's not me. I like to be there. I like interacting with people who like racing because I can't shut up about racing. And so I like talking to them. I like talking to people who support me. And it feels good that people relate to that. It feels good that people relate to the kid in the candy store that I am. That's how a lot of fans are when they go to NASCAR races. They're a kid in the candy store. They're so excited to see race cars. And that's how I am when I'm driving race cars. I mean, heck, at Vegas this weekend, when they binned it in turn two and then the Xfinity race, I was sitting there like trying to like downshift and like stop. But at the same time, I'm looking like, whoa, that's cool. Hopefully they're okay. I mean, like, because that's the fan in me. But that, like I said, like you relate to that though. Like you laugh because it's how we all are. It's in our blood. We have fun. And I want to do things different. Like the Monarch Roofing thing. I keep going back to that because that was just so stupid. It was so stupid. I pitched it to the general manager of Monarch Roofing. And I said, listen, this is my video idea. It's terrible. But I promise you it's going to do good. And guess what? It did good. And people liked it. And that's, yeah.
So in being a fan, growing up being a fan and watching races and seeing race cars and seeing these racetracks, you obviously get excited. Mm-hmm. Has it matched reality when you started coming to the racetrack and you got to be a race car driver and you got to go to these places and see these cars up close and personal? Did you have that same sense of excitement? Did reality meet the expectation when you went from fan to race car driver and got to climb in these cars and see these cars and go to these racetracks?
I would say your expectations change as the years go on. Little kid me. I mean, really, if you look at 8-9-year-old Ryan, he was a Gravedigger fan, loved Monster Trucks, loved Monster Jam, barely watched NASCAR, and just loved cars. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. And then you look at 10-11-year-old me, and it's like, okay, kids can do this too? Awesome. Let me try this. And then we go out there, and we start racing, and we start winning. Okay, cool. I can move up now. Woohoo! I can move to the street stocks. Oh, big car, heavy cars, and I can do that. And then we start winning races. Okay, now we're to super late models. Man, those things are scary fast. Never done that. Hopping a super late model and late models, and now that's normal. So now my expectation, I go from Irwindale to running Talladega. I remember racing at Irwindale and going in there and saying, wow, this is the biggest track I'll ever race on. And now I'm racing at Talladega. Your expectations and your expectations change as your career develops because you learn more about what goes into each opportunity. You learn more about the dynamics of something. My expectations, you know, in 2018 are different than my expectations in 2021. My expectations in 2020 are different than my reality of 2021. So, I mean, everything changes, but it's still a very much kid in the candy store feel every time I get to be around a race car.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, though, about watching a Tony Stewart race. So what races or what tracks and drivers did you enjoy watch when you were younger?
So I was a big Jeff Gordon fan growing up, and that was just because his car was cool. I loved the Flames growing up. And the funny thing is I didn't start watching NASCAR. I mean, I went to NASCAR races growing up. Like I said, I watched Tony Stewart win the 2010 fall race, I think it was, at Fontana, back when they had two dates, which would be amazing. But I went to those races and stuff. I didn't understand it. And then really the first NASCAR race I ever watched was the 2012 500. It was a school night, and it was just around a decent hour on the West Coast, so I was able to watch it. And that is what really like was like, whoa, this is insane. Like, this is NASCAR. And that made me a fan. And my first real season I watched was 2013. So, I mean, I'm still a new NASCAR fan, but I love it. It's crazy to think that, like, in the 2012 500, I was 11 years old, totally not knowing what was happening, but like, whoa, this is awesome. It became a passion. It became something that I loved, seeing cars go fast and how quick they take the corners. And then now doing it myself, I remember watching Las Vegas, like the Las Vegas Cup race when I was back in 2013 in the infield, because we did a Bandolero race afterwards. And now I just raced at Las Vegas. I just raced on that same track. That's so cool. So cool.
As we start to wind down, I want to switch to social media, because you are seemingly everywhere on every platform. You do a great job of embracing that. You do, I think, a chicken nugget review, chicken nuggy on YouTube. Like I said,
I got to bring those back. You do? I got to bring them back. Yeah, I haven't done it in a while. I've done three episodes so far. Haley Deegan, Chase Cabry, and Greg Stump from Off Axis Paint. And they were all really fun. It's more like a podcast with some nuggets. It's like if you mix like Glass Case of Emotion with Barstool Pizza Review, but instead of pizza, it's nuggets. It's like if you put those two and made it into one. But I enjoy it.
Yeah, so you do that on YouTube. You talked about TikTok and your partnership with them. Like I said, you're basically everywhere. What was the light bulb moment for you, Ryan, to where you saw that social media could be something that you could use to your advantage? And again, using as many platforms as possible.
Well, so it's kind of started when I was like in middle school, right? So in middle school, I just liked pictures of cars. So now that I drive car, I post car. I post that car a lot. And I probably annoyed a lot of my friends growing up posting the pictures of said car. But that kind of like was like me starting to like get excited about it. Like that was me like getting into it, like following all these drivers. Like, whoa, I'm following Jeff Gordon on Instagram. But now I look at it. Like now you fast forward to, I'd say 2017 is when I really started using it as like a tool. I started using it as something that I can like really utilize to grow. And I have a lot of drivers come up to me and they're like, how do you do this so much? Like, how are you so on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok? You do all these things so often. And it's like, how do you do that? And I'm just like, it's natural. I do it because it's fun. And that goes back to what I said about why chase a dream if you're not having fun with it. I literally posted a photo of the 2004 Daytona 500, and there was a promo for Shrek in it. And I posted that, and that got 500 something likes. I posted a picture of Shrek and it got 500 likes, but like, that's just me goofing off. That's just me having fun. And another thing about social media is it is the only form of promotion that is entirely free. So that's another way to look at it. Every race car driver looks at it and they're like, oh, I don't touch social media. I don't like doing it. I shouldn't say every race car driver, but you know what I mean? Like there's race car drivers out there that just don't like social media. Like they just hate it. I never got that. Who they own, but it's a free method of promotion. It's a free way to interact with people. It's a free way to talk to those who want to know more about you. I met you via social media. You've seen my stuff. Now we're talking. So you look at a lot of the relationships I've made from social media. You look at the connections I've made. You look at the sponsor deals I've made from social media. I mean, TikTok was formed from a tweet. That whole deal came because a tweet of a car rendering. And so it's a free method of promotion that you can interact with. You can talk to those who support you, who believe in you. And if you just have fun and you have to be real, that's the way I view it too. I don't sit there and always put on a cheery face. I don't sit on there and always goof off. I know when to be serious. I know when to be not serious. And I know that the people who follow me like that. I know that they like that I'm a person. The person who's putting the tweet out is me putting that tweet out, not a person who runs this person's social media. That's one of the tough things that I have yet to kind of really grasp my mind around, is when people have someone run their social media for them. It just comes off so disingenuous sometimes. I'm sure you see it as a writer. You see it all the time from the social media platforms. It's like, man, this is like something you would never say. Just talk in your voice, speaking words, talk. I've never understood that. I've never understood that. My fans, which is crazy, I never thought I'd have fans, but my fans appreciate that it's me talking to them. That's a big thing too. I'm able to talk directly to those who believe in me.
And again, there's so many social media platforms nowadays. Is it something for you to where you'll try any of them and see what works? Or do you actually do any kind of research and look at what works, how people are using it? Or again, do you just say, I'll give it a shot and see what happens?
It's a little bit of both, right? So I jumped on TikTok it was August 2019. I joined TikTok in August 2019. I was one of like probably two or three drivers at the time that were actually on the platform, right? So now, at the time of the signing with TikTok, I had 40,000 followers, which is still my highest of all my platforms at the time. Now, I believe I have 356,000 followers on TikTok, which is insane. Freaking nuts. Absolutely crazy. And you think about that, not all 356,000 of those people are direct Ryan Vargas fans. But if I'm able to reach 356,000 people, I'm going to help influence them become that Ryan Vargas fan. I'm going to help influence them become NASCAR fans. That's another thing. I looked at TikTok at the time, which, you know, in 2019, people looked at TikTok as kind of like what is this? Like this new thing? Like, I looked at it as, okay, I'm going to be one of the few drivers on there. It's going to be really, at the time, it was an untapped market. It was an untapped market for potential racing fans, or to make people racing fans and make them fans of me. And now I have more followers than Kyle Busch on TikTok. Like, that's crazy. And that's just me running it. I don't say that to, you know, I hope that doesn't come off that way as me trying to knock on anybody, but that's just crazy to think about. It's crazy to show like how trying new things and, you know, trying to twist things up does work.
Twitter can be as great as it is ugly. What is your approach to Twitter, and specifically when it comes to the trolls? Because everybody has their supporters, but everybody also has the ugliness that comes with Twitter. So what is your approach to that one?
So I've had a lot of people, thankfully for every one person that dislikes me, which I found that if people dislike me, they don't just dislike me, like they hate me with like a burning passion. And I'm just like, why? Let me give you a hug. Like, let's go get food. Like, I don't know why you... I try not to make people dislike me. But anyways, for every one person that really dislikes me, there's a group of 50, 60, 70 people that do, which I'm very fortunate for. Again, mind-boggled that there's that many people that would support me. But, you know, sometimes people do take it a little far. Sometimes people go just like in absurd directions with it that are just borderline offensive or just wrong. I've had people come at me for being a Hispanic driver in NASCAR on social media. Like, I've had people reach out to me. I've had my private info get taken because I'm, you know, Hispanic, and it's tough. It's a very rare thing. NASCAR is probably one of the best environments I've been in for that. Being a NASCAR Driver Diversity alumni, it's been such an incredible opportunity. And fortunately, stuff like that is very rare. But then again, you also do get those who are just don't like you, just to not like you. People don't like me because, oh, why are you hyping him up? He finishes anywhere from 18th to 25th on Saturdays. It's like, yeah. And I don't know. Like, yeah, you're right. You're right. Like, I finished 18th to 24th on Saturday. Like, heck yeah. I'd love to finish 18th. Like, let's go. Like, let's do it. I understand that people don't like the way people look at some things is they don't like rooting for the drivers who are in the mid pack, because it's like, oh, why don't you just win? Like, just win, stupid. Just go. hit the gas. I look at some people and I'm like, okay, they just don't understand the circumstances sometimes. Some people just don't understand. It's not worth getting into. And there's some that just don't like you and you just got to brush it off. I read it all. That's one bad thing about not having people that run your social is that you do see it all. Like, you see it all. It goes to me. So if someone sends me mean things, it comes to me. It hurts, but yeah. It's fun.
I know it hurts because, again, I'm the same way. I don't have anybody, of course, who's running mine. So I see it all. Maybe you and I should start a support group to where, like you said, we just be like, you know what? You just need a hug or let's just get,
yeah.
You know, cause there's people out there that you're just like, my goodness, if it's okay, the world's not ending, calm down.
Yeah.
You don't need to be mean. Goodness. One last thing for you, Ryan, let me wrap it up with this. It is the time of year where everybody's already looking ahead to 2022. So is there anything you can share with us about your 2022 plans or what you would like to do and hope to do next year?
You know, I would like to drive race cars. If I'm able to continue driving race cars next year, that's going to be a blessing. I have an amazing opportunity right now with JD Motorsports, and I hope to continue to grow that opportunity as well as just, you know, continue getting experience. I'm still, like I said, we talk about, I have 30 something races. That's still 30 something races compared to some of these guys, hundreds. And like Landon, look at Landon Castle, look at Jeffrey Earnhardt, even Bailey Curry. These guys have hundreds of starts under their belts. I lean on Landon so much. I think he has 500 starts. I think like Daytona was his 500th start in NASCAR. First of all, wow. Second of all, I'd be dumb to not lean on these guys. I'd be dumb to not lean on a Landon or a Jeffrey or a Bailey Curry or a BJ McLeod. I'd be dumb. So my goal is to continue driving race cars. My goal is to continue develop the relationships that I have and continue growing them while also never losing sight of having fun. I don't want to continue chasing it if I'm not having fun anymore. And I can promise you I'm still having a lot of fun. But, you know, there are times where people do get burnt out of what they're doing. And I know I'm not anywhere near that. So I want to continue having fun, continue driving race cars, and continue growing everything.
Yeah, that's a good philosophy to have. I live by that as well. The day that I wake up and I no longer enjoy it is the day you need to go find something else to do. So
exactly.
It's a good way to look at it. And let's also remind everybody too, that while you are a long shot, you are in that rookie of the year category. So your name will forever be on that list this year for the 2021 class. But Ryan, my goodness, I can't believe it's been an hour. It's been fantastic. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Well, all right. There it is. Ryan Vargas. Thank you again, Ryan, for joining the podcast. And we connected through social media. So once again, the power of social media, that's of course how I got to know Ryan in the first place. Now I cover him in the Xfinity series for Racer.com and I make sure to tweet about him when I can. He's got some great stuff going on. We talked about a TikTok bringing Alvin Kamara in, NFL superstar last year. I mean, it just was so cool how Ryan has put himself out there and used social media. And that's how we connected when I said, hey, you want to come on the podcast? He was great about responding right away and we made it happen. So the power of social media, kids, you can use it for good. It doesn't always have to be ugly. Let's change that. Let's make things beautiful. Keep things nice on social media. So check out Ryan. You can find him on Twitter. You can find him on Instagram. He's probably on Facebook just like I am. He's everywhere. TikTok. Be one of his thousands and thousands of followers. That's pretty awesome. So again, thank you to Ryan for coming on the podcast. My thanks to all of you for listening, of course. I hope you leave a rating and review. I hope you've subscribed by now and have been browsing the archives to see past interviews with great guests this year. So many to list, from Larry McReynolds to Eric Jones, Matt DiBenedetto, Gene Monahan of Hendrick Motorsports. My gosh, the list goes on, and we're going to keep rolling with that. So please leave a rating and review if you haven't done so already or you'd like to do so again. I hope it's 5 stars. Or let me know what you think and any feedback you have by finding me on social media. My Twitter handle is @KellyCrandall. That's the best and easiest way to find me. But you can also follow along and send me a message on Instagram if that's your primary or favorite way of following people on social media. I'm a big Instagram person, I have to say. It has grown on me so much over the years. And I probably spend a lot more time on there than I should. You know those screen updates you get at the end of the week about how much screen time you've had? Yeah, I bet if I was look on air Instagram is probably my top one. But I'll answer you if you're on there. So once again, if you're trying to find me, go to Instagram, go to Twitter. You can even go to Facebook. And as I like to remind people, if you're new here, make sure you look for the public page. That is where you will find links and clips from the podcast. And that is where you also find work for racer.com. I have a private page, but again, I don't use it. It is there just for family and friends. It has nothing to do with racing. I barely look at that. If I am on Facebook, it's because I am updating the public page for racing and podcasts and all of that. So make sure you look for that page if you want to follow me over there. Or maybe you want to see what's going on Patreon, because I am loving doing that and all of you are just fantastic. So patreon.com/Kelly Crandall. You can find more content to go along with the podcast, and it's a way for people to further support the podcast, further support me, and every little bit helps. So see the show notes that I put together for each conversation, get a little bit of background information on how I went about doing that, what I was thinking. You get preview clips before the episode drops every week, so you know who's coming. Speaking of knowing who is coming, you will be the first to know the guest lineup for a couple weeks in advance, and I've been doing a pretty fantastic job of actually recording a lot of interviews to where I'm now laying out a full month ahead. The list for November is already up, and I'm right now working on December, and when that gets finalized and all those interviews are recorded, you can be the first to know who those guests are. So things like that, hang out with me on Zoom, that's an offer. You can offer questions to guests once you know who is upcoming and I tell you who I'm recording with. So patreon.com, again, is just another way to enjoy additional content from the podcast as well as support me. So I appreciate that. And there is new support this week from one of my favorite people, Kevin Young, or otherwise Kevin in Virginia on Twitter. Kevin is fantastic. He has been a wonderful supporter of mine on social media. He's just a wonderful supporter of everybody in racing. I've never seen him say a bad thing about anyone. He's a regular on SiriusXM. He calls in and lets everybody know his thoughts, and he has questions about racing. Just so great. I love Kevin. He is just an ideal race fan, and he's someone that you guys should all get to know. And again, this is what it's about, the NASCAR community. So everybody become friends. Ryan Vargas talked about we need nice things on social media, right? Just give somebody a hug. It's okay. Let's all be nice to each other. And Kevin certainly does that. So I know I'm kind of rambling here about Kevin, but he makes me smile because he's everything that's right about social media, as are all of you. You guys have been great on social media, supporting me, supporting the podcast. So I was really happy to see Kevin's name pop up, that he is a new patron. So thank you, Kevin, and thank all of you again for your continued support. Okay, I need to get out of here because I'm just really happy. I'm really happy, again, that you guys are clicking and listening along. We're moving closer to that 200 mark. And I know I've said it before, but we in NASCAR like that 200 mark. So that is possible because all of you are listening to the podcast each week. You are engaged with it. You want to know what's coming. You love the conversations. You suggest guests and who you would like to hear from. And that is why we are plugging right along. So next week, we will be back and we're going to stay in the Xfinity series with another driver. And that is Josh Williams. And it's another driver who has a great story. And if you don't know Josh, you're going to get to know him a little bit better. And if you do know Josh, maybe you'll learn something, or maybe you'll just enjoy the conversation of everything he has going on with that wonderful mullet, by the way. It's a great look. So that is coming to you next week. I will see you then right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.